American Radio Newsreel, a headline-hunting expedition on the scene of action along the news fronts of the world. Page 1, Column 1. United States vessel sails for Norway in test of neutrality law.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the pier at Jersey City, the American Scantic liner Moore MacTide is loading cargo for Bergen, Norway.
President Roosevelt has designated war zones which American shipping must avoid under the present Neutrality Act. The Moore MacTide will skirt the proscribed areas, carrying 5,000 tons of general cargo.
On the deck of the Moore MacTide, the master, Captain John Otterson, is interviewed by Armand Lopez.
Captain Otterson, do you think the enactment of the new neutrality law will have much effect on the future of the American merchant marine?
Yes, I do. Because by a presidential proclamation, American ships are not allowed to enter a combat zone, which means that quite a number of our old established steamship lines are forbidden to keep those lines open that goes into the belligerent nations.
Well, that'll mean undoubtedly then considerable loss of trade.
It certainly do.
Now back to the studio, while our reporter is taking his mic to the radio shack of the Moore MacTide to interview radio operator Willis. Come on back in, Mr. Lopez and Mr. Willis.
Now, I suppose you know the tradition of the radio operator. He's always the last man to leave the ship, and he sticks to his key and that sort of thing. How do you feel about going across on this trip?
Well, I think that it's going to be quite an adventure. I'm really interested in making this crossing, and not only because I'd like to get back to the Baltic Run and get back to the Scandinavian atmosphere, but I want this little bit of excitement, whatever it may be, and I don't think that there's any possibility at all of being torpedoed. Of course, we always have to run the possibility of being detained by some belligerent nation. Then I think it'll all end up pretty well.
Well, of course, there's one possibility that you didn't think of there, and that is striking a mine.
Oh, well, I hope that won't come to pass.
Yes, we all hope that.
And we're certain that all America hopes so too, Mr. Willis, and that everybody will be watching your trip and its outcome in relation to the workability of the Neutrality Act. Thanks, Captain Otterson and Mr. Willis.
The Woman's Page, an interview with the Rani of Sarawak. Mrs. Viner Brooke is the only white Rani in the world, her husband the only white Raja. They rule over the British Protectorate of Sarawak, a nation of 600,000 souls on the northwest coast of Borneo.
The American Radio Newsreel takes you for an interview with the Rani of Sarawak and Garnet Marks.
First, suppose you tell our listeners the correct method of addressing a Rani and just what that title means.
Well, it makes me a little shy to tell you, but Raja and Rani really means king and queen in our case.
I see. And how did the Brooke family come into the ruling house of Sarawak and when?
Well, very nearly a hundred. Next year it'll be 100 years ago that they first became Raja of Sarawak, the first man who went out there. James Brooke by name.
Let me come in with an editor's note. Although Sarawak is a British protectorate, the Rani's subjects have no right to vote, but neither do they pay any income tax. Now back to our reporter and the Rani.
Rani, could you tell our listeners what demands the British government have made on your country in the way of war materials and men?
Well, it would be very difficult for us to send an army because I can't see a lot of naked ducks in the middle of the German lines. But we send financial help, and that's about all that we really can do from there.
Perhaps the ladies are interested in a style note from Sarawak, as the Rani describes winter fashions for the well-dressed lady potentate.
Well, they're dressed very like I'm dressed now at this moment, in a Malay dress, a little coat, and a sarong, and a golden scarf across my shoulders. That is the Malay dress.
Well, I'm afraid a costume like that would be a trifle chilly for America in December. But thanks for the tip just the same, Mrs. Vina Brooke, the Rani of Sarawak.
Her page, Otis Skinner reminisces on 60 years before the footlights.
A legendary figure of the American theater, an actor who trooped with the great Edwin Booth, American Radio Newsreel is proud to present an interview with a man who made history and tradition on the stage. Your questioner, Eric Corkhurst, with Mr. Otis Skinner.
Now, what play of the many you've done would you say that you enjoyed playing the most?
My dear boy, whatever I was playing in at the time.
That's fine.
Yes.
What would you say was the most amusing experience you had that you could recall offhand?
Well, that's rather a hard thing to answer. I think the most amusing experience that I ever had was when I had to make my first entrance and first appearance at Daly's Theater. And had on a perfectly swell dress coat. I just graduated from the legitimate ranks in the Lawrence Barrett Company to the comedy company of Augustin Daly, and I had a perfectly grand dress coat. I had to make my entrance, having come home supposedly from an afternoon party with my young wife, and take off my outer coat and lay it aside for a moment before going to the opera. As I started to remove my outer coat, the undercoat, being of fragile material, proceeded to slip off with it. I looked down to my right arm and saw a large expanse of white shirt, and hastily drew my coat back on that side. I tried the left side. Again, on that side, the expanse of white shirt at the shoulder showed, much to my embarrassment. Meanwhile, the audience commenced to titter. And my manager, Mr. Augustin Daly, was standing looking at his new recruit, saying, "My heavens, what is this young man that I've got hold of? What's he going to do in my company?" Finally, realizing that it couldn't be done if I kept the coat on, I should have to receive the ridicule of the audience, so I deliberately peeled off my outer coat, and in doing so, both coats came off, and then I stood there without any comment at all, separating the two coats. Meanwhile, the sleeves of the undercoat had turned inside out. I put them back, put the undercoat on, and received the biggest round of applause that I ever had.
Well, Mr. Skinner, I'll wager that a number of our older listeners in will be writing in to tell us that they remember that very entrance.
The movie page, backstage with Martha Ray.
Martha Ray, that Hollywood star of songs and snickers, leaves the movie set for a few words to our airwave audience with our Hollywood reporter, Bill Harding.
Martha, how long have you been in the theater?
Oh, I've been in about 20 years.
My, you must have started when you were quite young then, didn't you?
3 years old.
Wait a minute, 20 and 3, that makes you just about 23 years old, is that right?
That's right.
Well, you were practically raised on the stage then, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Well, now, how did you happen to invade Hollywood?
Well, that's sort of a long story, but I'll make it kind of short.
We have a lot of time, go right ahead.
All right. You see, when I got a booking to go out to one of the cafes there, one of the cafe clubs. We were supposed to be there about 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked there, and I stayed a little longer, and everybody from the picture industry, they all came in to see me, but nothing happened. They were there night in and night out, so one night they asked me to go over to the Trocadero and work there. It was on a Sunday evening. So I went over, and naturally it was for nothing. And I worked there, and the same people were there, but I don't know, something happened, and they just signed me up Monday morning. And
that was a benefit that turned out contrary to usual benefits then, wasn't it?
Yes, for me.
And now, Bill, ask Martha about that great picture we dreamed of. You know, with all the leading men. Maybe we'll find a producer to buy the scenario.
Martha, how would you enjoy making a picture and having opposite you Charles Boyer, Clark Gable, Robert Taylor, and George Brent?
That was Martha Ray in person and not a mimic. Thanks for the glimpse into the private life of a screen comedian, Miss Ray. And here's hoping you get over that cold, too.
Page 1, column 2. American Radio Newsreel interviews a member of Parliament.
Arriving in America by Pan American Clipper is the Right Honorable Roland Robinson, member of English Parliament. At the airport, to snap a candid radio portrait is your microphone reporter, Armand Lopez, to question Roland Robinson.
Well, would you mind telling us just what is your mission here in this country? In short, is there any special reason why you are here at this time?
Yes, there are several reasons for my being here. One of them is private business, and I'm here to purchase plant and machinery for a company of which I am the chairman. But I am also on my way to Canada, where I am going to join the British Under Secretary of State, who is engaged on setting up a big center for the training of flyers in Canada.
Now, Mr. Robinson, you were in England when the war broke out, I believe. Can you give us a description of England during a blackout?
I was in England when the war broke out. And to live in a blackout is almost unbelievable. The whole country is absolutely pitch black. Nowhere is a light to be shown. Every neon sign is put out. No light is allowed to show from any private house. No shop window can have a light out. No movie house or theater can show any kind of a light at all. Even the motor cars that can only run with small lights which are almost undistinguishable from a distance. And the blackness is so bad, if there is no moon, you cannot even see halfway across the road. And that, of course, makes it very dangerous for people who have to move about at night.
Pardon the interruption, Mr. Robinson, but almost everyone in America, I am sure, would like to know just how the English people feel about the remote possibility that America might get into this war.
But I do not think it would be right to say that the people of England would look or wish for anything more from America than that you should continue to supply us with the equipment to fight the war at a fair price. Indeed, there is no shortage of manpower.
Then you would sum it up by saying that what England expects is economic support, inasmuch as they believe that they have all the men they need. Is that the answer?
In short, we have more than sufficient manpower, and we do not ask that American boys should be sent across the water to fight this war.
Well, I'm certain that's a welcome piece of information to every American, Mr. Roland Robinson. And coming from a member of Parliament, it probably puts plenty of American fears to rest.
The American Radio Newsreel is produced by Eric Palm, edited by Joseph Johnstone, and released throughout the United States and Canada by Ayers Prescott Incorporated, Radio City, New York. Your announcers, James Clemenger
and Alan Barnes.